At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
fair. And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
We're making an ad.
Snapping ad.
This is where I think if we're doing it right, Alec Baldwin comes in. He says a couple things. Mm. He listens to the podcast every week. Yep. Has he been canceled? Was Alec Baldwin the one who killed somebody? I hear that Gary Sinise is free.
Oh, okay, great.
He hasn't worked since 2020.
So, what would be the script that we would have Gary Sinise say for the Napping Through Happy Hour podcast?
Listen to this damn show. Damn it.
The Napping Through Happy Hour podcast brought to you by Geekscape.
Real life, real drama, real time.
I'm Gary Sinise.
That's the ad. That's the ad. That's the ad.
How you doing, Joe?
Hey, Matt. I'm all right. It's early for me. Lord.
It's very early. It is 8 a.m. where you're at.
I know. I mean, that's not early if you work, you know, at 5, but it is early for me who work at 8.
But that's how much you love this show, the OC, that you're like, I will get up at 8 a.m. and talk about an episode of the OC. And what an episode to wake up early for. We're talking about season 1, episode 5, The Outsider. I'll play my hand right now. This might be my favorite episode we've watched so far for this podcast.
No, that can't be true.
What? So here's the thing. There are parts of this episode that I hate. I think that last week's episode, the debut overall, was a better episode. But I think that this particular episode, there were like 3 or 4 scenes where I was like, holy shit, that is a brilliantly written scene. That is a great, like, I think that there are amazing peaks in this episode.
You, okay, all right.
All right, we're diving in. I'm ready for
this. Let's get to it, because I did not feel the same. So here we go.
All right, so this episode starts off, you've got, oh my God, I just blanked on everyone's name. Ryan, Seth, I almost said Adam.
Adam Brody.
Yeah, I was thinking of Adam Brody. I'm like, Adam and Ryan. So Ryan and Seth go to the Crab Shack. Is that the name of this place?
It's not the Crab Shack. It's the, is it? Yes, it is the Crab Shack.
All right, they go to the Crab Shack. And the opening dialogue is them talking about a bunch of different things simultaneously. Mm-hmm. But one of the things is about killing the lobsters. I'm very charmed by this opening conversation. It's funny, but I need to make a confession here on this show, and I don't know where your stance is on this. I hate pretty much all seafood. All of it.
Hate? Like what kind of hate?
Like, I can't, like, so the only seafood that I eat is barely seafood. It's New England clam chowder. That's it. That's mostly the broth with a few clams inside of it.
And potatoes and corn and,
yeah, a bunch of other stuff. Yeah, that's barely even constitutes seafood. So my family for a while tried to do seafood, and the only fish, we tried like 5 or 6 different fish. The only fish that I even kind of liked was orange roughy. And then literally after having orange roughy, I was in class and they were going over which fish have the highest concentrations of mercury, and orange roughy is like the top of that list, at least back in like the 2000s. So it's like, well, I guess that takes orange roughy off the table. I used to eat crab, but then like I recently tried it and I'm like, I don't know why I liked this as a kid. And I've tried lobster, didn't like it. I can't even go near shrimp. The smell of shrimp actually like causes a gag reflex. in me. Everyone else in my family, like my sister and my brother for years, because they were born 3 years and a day apart from each other, mm-hmm, so they always mm-hmm. would have combined birthday parties. For years, it would be like, hey, we're going to go get like 50 crabs and invite a bunch of friends over and just like wreck some crab. You know what I mean? Like that was like... That is the biggest thing that makes my my birth questionable on if my dad is actually my dad, is his undying love of all things seafood and my like resistance to every piece of it.
Does your mom like seafood?
My mom enjoys it. She'll eat it. She likes having shrimp at every holiday and stuff like that. Like it's just me. There's no one else in the family that's like, ugh, seafood, but Matt Kelly.
Wow.
But I'm going to make an assumption that you are a fan of seafood just based on the fact that you were born essentially on an island.
Well, yes. So here's the thing, right? So like the local seafood that you get when you are raised on an island in the Pacific is different than like the commercial seafood you would get on the mainland, right?
Oh, like the giant bag of frozen shrimp that my parents bring home every
like
holiday.
Not even that, like, you know, we had that, but like the fish that you would get from like fishermen that would fish the waters of the Pacific, right, is different, like so categorically different than what you than like going to your my local fisherman's co-op, right? Just right. Because of where it is. And so like I prefer kind of the I'm going to call them like the mainland fish as opposed to the Pacific kind of fish, because the Pacific fish, okay, it's like the taste is a little bland. There's a lot of bones, so it's not as easy to fillet. You really kind of have to concentrate.
Okay.
It's kind of a cultural thing where it's like if you're eating fish, it's like generally very quiet. No one is talking because we need to concentrate on not choking to death on a bone.
Interesting. Because I can't imagine a dinner quiet in my entire life.
True. But like it's more, it's that thing. So like I've had this like familial reputation of being someone who doesn't like fish, when in actuality, like I'll eat a salmon, I'll eat a good seared ahi, you know, a tuna, a trout, like give me a good sea bass. Like, you know, white people, the fish.
Yeah,
of Newport.
There you go. The fish of Newport. All right. So they're at the Crab Shack and Ryan is a little frustrated that everything is being paid for on his behalf and he wants to earn his keep a little bit. And then I just love in TV shows when fate instantly intervenes. He's like, well, where are you going to get a job? And then as soon as he says that, you just hear someone like, you know what? I quit this place. And you're just like, well, there we go.
Can we talk about that thing where like, can we talk about like male pride in TV shows, yeah, where it's just like, I don't like that they're paying for me. I need to get a job. And I'm like, I get it. But dude, like you could... Like, you know, that housekeeper that's at the fucking house, like they could fire her and you could do that.
You could just do that. Yeah. Did you have you ever done this is like a move that I do very often, which is like you never want to just immediately accept someone offering to foot the bill. So you do like the one or two rounds of like, are you sure? Well, can I at least put in tip? Like,
the dance. The dance, as it were.
The dance. And like there are times where deep down I'm like, Kelly, don't fight this too hard because you need this right now. You need someone to be buying you lunch.
Yeah.
But you still are like, oh man, are you sure? Like I could throw in a little bit and then like, no. It's my pleasure. And it's like, okay, well, thank you. like I flipped the switch so quick after the two complimentary pushbacks.
See, so like I'm a Taurus, right? And in very Taurus fashion, like I do love, I love a warm meal. I love a good meal, but I also in true Taurus fashion, like love when gifts as well. So like, I'm very willing
to just accept. Yeah. You're like, thank you.
I'm always ready to like, I'm always ready to split a bill, right? I've been with friends that are really good because like for a while I didn't drink, like I didn't order drinks at dinner. I have friends who are really good about like, well, you know, I got wine, so let me put in a tip, you know, so they, that's a thing. But I also come, like, culturally, again, speaking about the islands, right? Culturally, I come from a place where it's just like, if you're the one inviting people to dinner, then it's like, you should be ready to take care of it. And I remember very clearly, like, my cousins, and there's like, you know, like 20 of us, we all went out to dinner. My sister, older sister's best friend was there. He was trying to pay for everybody. And we were fighting him. Like, this is the kind of things that happen culturally with people from Guam. They're like fighting each other as to who gets the check. And then the server came over and was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And then my sister's best friend, he like gives him his card, and he looked at the server and was just like, if you do not take my card, I will have you fired. And he was like, you, you're the one.
Damn.
I'll take your card.
So my one friend, Mike, in one of the more baller moves I've ever experienced in my life, we all went to hibachi
together.
Ooh,
yum.
Oh, I love me a good hibachi. And Mike was visiting from Tennessee. We hadn't seen him in a couple of years because he had moved down there. And he excused himself to the bathroom. And then when he came back, he's like, all right, let's go. And we're like, what? And he's like, I already paid the bill up front. I didn't have to go to the bathroom. And that was his way of like getting around the whole dance and like not giving us a chance to fight with him. And I was like, one day if I have enough money to just pay for an entire table of eight people's hibachi, I'm gonna pull that move. Yeah. Because that is a baller ass move.
Yeah, my my brother-in-law will do that often. Like he'll go to the bathroom, or like we will sit down at dinner. I've seen it happen a couple times, so I know when he does it. He will just like, when he gets handed the menu, he will like clandestinely, like that, the video gesture is really weird, but he'll clandestinely slide his card to the server. And then they'll have a moment, because like my parents will always try to pay, and he's like, then like at the end of the meal, like the server will just bring, you know, the check, but
the receipt. Oh, that's a good, I might borrow that for like a date one time.
Yeah. Come on.
That's a good
date. Come on, Kelly.
I can't afford a whole family, but I could afford a second person.
Yeah.
All right. So we're still 1 minute into this episode. So we go into the Cohen's house, and everybody is gossiping about the results of the previous episode. This Jimmy fight, Jimmy's stolen all of our money. And it is heavy stuff that's happening, but there's something about the over-the-top melodramatic music that's playing as Seth, Ryan, and Sandy are listening in on the conversation that takes it from serious to hilarious to me. Because it's like, it's only a couple notes away from like Sarah McLachlan's In the Arms of the Angel. Like, it's such a ridiculous musical score. But that, we're setting up that there are some issues in the world of Jimmy Cooper, in case you missed it last week. And now we're into the crazy world of Ryan working at the Crab Shack. And this is where we meet Donnie. And I am charmed by Donnie at first, right? Like, he's talking about like these fucking spoiled people. And he says, welcome to Newport Beach, where things only appear to be casual. And I'm like, ooh, that's a good ass line.
I got to give you that.
Luke shows up to try to win Marissa back, and I should have written down exactly what the quote is because I watched this late last night, but I just wrote down, how does Luke fuck up so bad so quickly? Like, it's like he's sitting down for all of like 10 seconds and brings up like her dad going to jail and stealing everybody's money in his bid to win her back, which it's like, read the fucking room, Luke.
Luke at this point in the season, like in this just season of television, is someone who like he kind of does later on in the season, he will do a transition to be more like a Joey Tribbiani type character, right? Like he'll play the fool. What you may know, because you're also a fellow fan of the Gilmore Guys, as the deaning of Luke, right?
Okay, they dean him down. All right. So we'll talk about that for next week's episode too, because like there are times in just six episodes that I've watched, there are times where Luke is an almost likable person. And then there are other times where I just want to punch him in his stupid face.
And they do a good, like the characterization of him specifically, right, is is actually pretty great because they give him those moments. And he,
it doesn't, yeah, it doesn't feel like there's different writers who don't understand who the character of Luke is. When he's a sweetheart, it seems genuine. And when he's a douchebag, it seems genuine. Like, yeah, it doesn't feel like, you know, again, since we already brought up the Gilmore Guys anyway, like how they talk about Daniel Palladino scripts feeling like he doesn't have the love for the characters that Amy does, mm-hmm, in the way that he'll write dialogue. I don't feel that with Luke. I feel like everybody who's writing this show is on board for who Luke is or who he's going to be. But it is like frustrating when there's episodes where I'm like, man, I really like this version of Luke. And then the very next episode, I'm like, oh, he's a piece of shit again. Son of a bitch. Yeah.
We do get a lot. There is some more fun Luke stuff coming. So just,
I'm excited.
I'm glad that you're on board with the character right now, because
I would say some exciting Luke stuff happens at the end of this episode too. But we'll get there.
Yeah, well, let's get there.
So real quick, before we jump back to the Crab Shack, there is a shot of Seth just laying outside, and he's wearing my favorite shirt that I've seen him wear so far in this season, which is ADG, and it's pictures of how to make those chords on a guitar and now start a band, which I'm not. Do you know the historical background of that specific shirt?
No, I don't, but I figured it was some insidery music stuff.
A little bit. So there's a great documentary called American Hardcore that's about the like hardcore punk music scene of the 80s. Specifically in New York, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C. were like the three hotbeds, mm-hmm, for it, mm-hmm, where you're getting bands like Minor Threat and Black Flag and Bad Brains and all of these bands. And a popular thing that was happening in that scene was people would draw out those three chords because they were the most common chords in that music and write, now start a band. And that would be like flyers that they would hand out to promote shows in the D.C. and L.A. and New York area, where these weird little like, here, this is all you need to know, go form a band, like, get your message out there type statement. So I was like, oh, that's dope that that's on a shirt now. Like, I almost want to track that shirt down for myself. I'm going to use that as a really quick jumping point to just say that as much as we crap on the early 2000s fashion, and it is bad for sure, Seth Cohen is one fine dressing human being. Like, when he shows up, I'm like, I love this dude.
Oh, Matt, that's so delightfully heterosexual of you to say that. Matt,
the popped cut. Well, no, and I was never like a collared shirt guy, but Seth Cohen can pull it off in a way that I couldn't. But
see, like, here's the thing, right? Like, at the time, I thought the same thing. I actually modeled a lot of my style at the time off of Seth. Quirky graphic tees, track jackets, like very Anchor Blue, Aeropostale circa, you know, early aughts, post-Iraq invasion, like, is, yeah, is where that fashion sensibility lies, right? I look back on it now and it's just so, there's a scene in the next episode where like it is so painfully, it's so painfully straight more than like painfully early aughts. But I love that you said that because I feel like it honors that part of me that thought that Seth Cohen was the pinnacle of, you know, to use some SAT words, was the pinnacle of sartorial achievement.
All right, look at that.
But that is definitely not how I feel now watching it. It's very cringe.
I'm mixed on Seth. No, I was going to say, look, we'll get into some Seth stuff. There is a moment in next week's episode where I was like, about fucking time, Seth, but we'll get there. So Seth shows up at the Crab Shack. He's got some great news. He bought tickets to an IMAX shark documentary, and Ryan does not seem super enthused, and he has the great line, I don't know, man, this town sucks. It's the best I can do, which got like a genuine chuckle out of me. And then here comes Donnie, and now the charm of Donnie is starting to wane on me very quickly when he invites them to a party, and he says, man, we're going to have 6 kegs and some crazy honeys. And I'm just like, sign me up, Donnie.
Also,
let's go.
Okay, so like, Matt, you lived in LA, right? You lived in LA for a hot minute.
For for, yeah, 6 months. I feel like that barely counts, but yeah, like, I was there for a bit.
You live there, right? Like, so yeah. Here's the thing. Like, I don't know, like, your East Coast listeners, right? If they're going to understand the, like, that exchange that they have, like, you're from Corona, I'm from Chino. Like,
yeah,
we're going to go to this party in Long Beach. And it's just like, what is, like, this makes no sense, right? This,
none of it makes sense. It's, but I'm not thinking about it. I'm taking it for what it is. So here's what I'll say. When I'm talking about the peaks and valleys, right? Donnie is a valley for sure in this episode. Like, it's like everything happening with Donnie, with the parties, with all of this. It's like, whatever. It's frustrating teen drama. But let's talk a little bit about Sandy and Jimmy in this episode, because I actually think that the scenes with Sandy and Jimmy are some of the most charming and well-written that I've seen so far in this show. First of all, I love that there's this continuity that Sandy Cohen is just very good at this video game that he was playing with Ryan an episode earlier. Like, that love. So he's playing this video game with Jimmy. Sandy is going above and beyond here. He is trying to help a person that he genuinely doesn't care that much for, but he cares about Kirsten, and he cares that Kirsten and this person are friends. And he also, to a certain point, even though we haven't seen it one-on-one, I get a vibe that he genuinely cares about Marissa and the basically the Cooper children. I feel like Julie, he can take or leave. I don't think he has much of an opinion there. But the scene that I wrote down, I said, this scene at the golf course is incredible. The dialogue exchange that happens on that golf course, I love. Like, first of all, I feel like it's a really weird, super, super carrot, honestly, in 2022 still sticks. It's always a weird look when someone has stolen $4 million from people that trusted him and he's like playing a game of golf. Like,
yeah,
we see it all the time. It's something that frustrates
me. He's just like out here free, like
just free doing his thing. But there is this scene where Sandy tells him, look, you can get a plea deal. We'll keep you out of jail, but you're going to have to sell the house. You're going to have to sell your equity. Like, you're going to have to pay everybody back by any way you can. And he says, like, wouldn't your wife want you to be there with your family? And Jimmy has one of the most telling lines in the series so far when he says, whose wife are we actually talking about? Which says that Jimmy is aware that Kirsten would absolutely want Sandy to get rid of all of the material things in order to be there for the family. And he married Julie, who doesn't. And we get more into that in the next episode for sure. But,
well, not, I'm, again, the, I'm not here to the, be a Julie Cooper apologist, right? Especially after this episode.
But that's what, at the with the information that I have been provided up to these five episodes, that is clearly what that line is supposed to be drawing in the sand, and I think it does a good job.
Yeah.
And then he talks about how he needs to find a way to not go to jail but still provide for his family, and Sandy Cohen has my favorite line in the whole episode, which is, there's more to providing for a family than money. And, like, he runs down that thing where it's like, don't you want to see your kids graduate? Don't you want to be there for, like, all of these giant first things? Like, money's not going to be a factor in seeing your kids graduate and grow up.
Yeah.
It's such a great scene. And I am not a person who likes Jimmy Cooper. I want that to be clear. But I am a person who stands Sandy Cohen. And I think that this is to me, the best scene that I've seen so far that shows why I love Sandy Cohen, is that he really is, like, he's tapped into what matters, and he can put his personal feelings of someone aside to do what the right thing is. And in his mind, Jimmy Cooper getting a slight slap on the wrist is the right thing because it benefits Marissa and her sister.
And he's also, so, a couple points. One, completely correct. I think that I want you to hold on to this feeling
okay.
as you move through the series. you're correct in saying that, like, you know, Sandy is like holding on to, you know, to the heart of the matter, right? Which is like, you, yeah. he's trying to figure out a way for Jimmy to still be a dad, to be present and to be a dad. There may be things coming in, you know, as drama unfolds, right? So just yeah, a little bit of a little bit of foreshadowing. No spoilies, Kevin T. Porter.
much appreciated.
But the thing about it, though, right, is that it also kind of starts what I feel is the, like, Sandy is a public defender, right? So he has that great line of like, you know, I'm used to defending people I don't particularly like. And in this situation, it's like the law, like, he stole $4 million. Sandy, that's like, that goes against, like, you know, his bleeding heart liberalness of, you know, trying to help someone who committed like this huge theft. But at the same time, he is still a father. And so, and a fellow father. And not for nothing, like, he would do literally anything for Kirsten. So,
And he's also not a father, but he's a daddy.
These two, the budding bromance that we are getting between Sandy Cohen and Jimmy Cooper is, like, fantastic. Because, like, you know, they both look so... You know, we also get a lot of like Sandy in different recreational outfits this episode. We have him golfing. Yes. We have him like coming back from surfing. Like, it's just very like they were working really hard with Peter Gallagher on this series to make him like this sex symbol.
Side note, I had to text somebody, a future guest on this show for sure. My friend Robert Bacon of 91 Donkey Lane has a new YouTube series where him and his wife Ruth watch bad rom-coms that neither of them have seen before.
Are you talking about While You Were Sleeping?
Sort. We'll get there.
Okay.
So they call it These Two Idiots. It's a great YouTube series. Go watch it. But I recommend it to them to watch the Mandy Moore teen drama How to Deal. Which I think is like the best of the worst of teen drama. It's like every single cliche that you can shove into an hour and 40-minute movie, they somehow managed to put in there. But as they're reviewing it, Peter Gallagher plays her dad, and they're like, oh my God, I know that guy. He's the coma patient from While You Were Sleeping. And I messaged him, was like, that is Sandy Cohen, and you put some respect on that name.
How to deal. Thank you for dredging that back up. Oh my God.
All right. So Sandy Cohen, Jimmy Cooper, this is what made me like this episode. This was where I was like, this is the most invested I've been in any person's actual story where I'm like, I need to see what happens next in this storyline. So that's why I liked this episode as much as I did. But let's get into the things I didn't like so much, which is Donnie. In fact, one of my notes was, I do not like Donnie. Is he a one episode person or a new regular on the series? Please God, not a new regular on the series. I don't need you to answer that for me. I'm pretty sure that even if he's
Even if
this isn't a one episode appearance, I don't think that he's like part of the gang where he's going to be hanging out every episode. So I feel clear in that fear. They go to this party, and there's when they walk into. So we'll talk about the music in a second, but I don't know who Grand Scheme is, but he must have signed some type of deal because he has three different songs that appear in party scenes during this episode alone. So when they walk in. Well, actually, when they walk into the party, it's another beautiful example of what year we're in. It is not the let's get it started version of the Black Eyed Peas song. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like that happened. I was like, oh, wow.
We are firmly there.
Right in there. So that plays and I'm like, oh, they went with the album version, which is an interesting call. But then there's this heavy metal song called Brick by Brick by the group Grade 8 that's playing. And it's playing throughout the entire scene of like Ryan talking on the phone with Marissa. But I think it's only there for when they find out that the car has been destroyed for them to bring up the like gnarly metal. But because of the way that they put it in there. I'm like, is this song actually playing at this party that just had Black Eyed Peas on a couple seconds earlier? Like, it breaks so much of the reality of the scene. But because they showed up to this Long Beach party in one of their fancy Newport Beach cars, it gets vandalized for them being Richie's. And there's this great line from Seth Cohen when Sandy's looking at the car and he goes, and this happened at the IMAX?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, shark movies, man, they bring out a rough crowd. So good line there. We'll get back into the Donnie of it all in a second, mm-hmm. because we just can't get enough of him this episode. He's in almost every frame. But I want to give a quick shout out to a character that I was unsure how I thought the first two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But man, does Kirsten fucking crush it in this sauna scene.
Yes.
Like, just dropping hard facts on every one of these women in this sauna.
Yeah.
And just and essentially being like, I'm not saying that Jimmy didn't fuck up. I'm just saying, like, who the hell are we?
Yeah.
To stand in judgment of any. She pulls a real Jesus and you without the sin, cast the first
cast
stone
the first
type
stone,
speech.
Yes. Like, in her white robe and her beautiful blonde hair.
It's great. It's another great scene. The scenes with the Cohen parents are the standouts of this entire episode. And it's not even close.
No, like, because you have the mediocre drama of, again, because, like, the only thing that they have in the absence of commenting about racial disparity, right? All we can comment about is class. And so we have Donnie, whose primary function is to represent, and that's what all of season one is about. All of season one is like, we need to remind you, the viewer, us, the viewer, and like in essence, Ryan, the character, that he is not of this place. Like,
he is an outsider.
He is
the
outsider.
Outsider could refer to Ryan or Donnie.
Exactly. Like, you are not of this place. You do not belong here. And probably you are more well suited to where you came from. So that's the thesis of this whole first season,
which is ironic because I agree with it, but I agree with it because I think that Ryan is too good for this town.
Like, I see,
at least to this point.
Up to
there
this
is,
point, yes.
It gets next week's episode. a lot happens, and we'll get there. I do appreciate Seth Cohen going over and trying to smooth everything over with Marissa and Ryan, because Ryan was supposed to have a movie night with her. It was going to be their first date. And then Seth drags him to, like, check out this party at Donnie's friend's house. Mm-hmm. And then chaos ensues. And I like Marissa as a character. Mm-hmm. Like, I do. I think that she is one of the first truly likable characters that has, like, wandered into this show. Was like her and Sandy. They both seem to have the same begrudging participation in Newport Beach, and I do love that for them. But then the way that Seth smooths things over, he's like, how about you come over our house tonight? Ryan's a great cook. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll make you some food. You guys have a great night.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan is making her grilled cheese sandwiches, and he's talking about how these are great grilled cheese sandwiches, and he takes these things off of the grill, and my note is, I can't tell if Ryan burnt these grilled cheese sandwiches or like a psychopath made them on wheat bread, but they do not look appealing. Like, they are so golden crisp that I'm like, ooh, no, that's not a grilled cheese to me. A white man with a proper palate for grilled cheese.
A palate for only grilled cheese, some would say.
Only grilled cheese, not seafood.
But you know, grilled fried processed cheese.
Yes.
Which is
throw a couple Kraft singles onto some white bread and call it a day.
Give me some butter, maybe some mayo if you're feeling fancy.
Dude, let me tell you about the psychotic way that my dad for at least 2 years made grilled cheese sandwiches, because, and I quote, less cleanup. He would toast two pieces of bread in the toaster and then smear butter on it throw the cheese in between it and then microwave it for 30 seconds and be like, it's just as good. It was not just as good, Joe.
Your dad like has successfully managed to avoid incarceration for that atrocity. Yeah.
He was in his 40s cooking like he was a 19-year-old off to college for the first time. Like it was wild. But this is where Luke and Holly start to hook up.
Yes. Which, like, can we be done with Holly? I feel like she's, I forgot
who she was.
Yeah.
I had to remind myself who Holly was. I was like, who is this person?
She's the one who's cooking chicken drumsticks.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a bikini
while holding a cocktail. Yeah. She is a very forgettable character, and I am good with if this is the last I see of Holly. I don't think
who
I'll
also,
be so lucky.
Like,
but
whose dad, like, she's the character I want to be, right? Like, whose dad is also, like, the guy who punches Jimmy out of the debut
calls
him a thief. Who? So essentially, she's poor, right? She has no more wealth, but you know, she's doing pretty great. She got this beach house. Her parents don't really care.
No, she's doing all right. And this is where the episode escalates so quickly because Luke comes down because he's about to have sex with Holly, mm-hmm. but then they hear the sound of glass breaking. Holly comes down and sees that Donnie and his friends have broken her blender, and Luke goes to defend her. And Donnie pulls out a gun, and we're 5 episodes into this show, and Luke has been shot already, which
yeah.
seems like a season 1 cliffhanger or like something that would happen in season 2. But here we are, episode 5. There's already been gun violence.
Yes.
Now, thankfully, it's only in his arm. And then in a note that I wrote and then later felt completely differently about 45 minutes later when I watched the next episode, I wrote, Ryan is insanely too good of a person. Not so sure about that after the next week's episode, but at this point in the storytelling, Ryan's like, hey, I'm sorry that I was trying to defend Holly's honor and keep a fight from escalating and got you shot in the arm. Let me not just drive you to the hospital, but let me call your ex-girlfriend, whom I know you are still in love with because she's someone that you want to be there for you. Like, mm-hmm. just like chivalrous to a dumb degree.
Yeah.
And then after all of this, it ends on a joke. The last line of the episode is a fucking joke where Seth Godin says, United, we're unstoppable, but divided, we get shot.
Josh Schwartz, right? The creator, like he knew what he was getting into when he knew exactly what he was doing. This is episode 5. Where like if this was a modern 10 episode series, like this would be the mid-season finale,
yeah.
almost. But no, we have like there's like 15, 17 more episodes after this, so
yep.
we got to keep you. We need you to know the drama. And again, that the thesis of season 1 is that Ryan does not belong. How does he negotiate living in the OC when it's a place that is not suited for him? In this way, it's like, you know, because he related to this other kid, he's working a working job, a working man's blue collar job, and it invited this violence, right? Like his very, yeah. Ryan's very presence is inviting this kind of violence.
But I push against that again for the same thing I said last week, where it's like they keep trying to make it seem like, well, if not Ryan, this place would never have violence. But Ryan didn't have a goddamn thing to do with Holly's dad beating the shit out of Jimmy in the middle of the debut.
No, you're entirely correct. But I think in this, when it comes to the plots with the kids, right?
Yeah,
like it's all Ryan focused in that way, because the white collar yeah. crime, like, you know, they'll gossip about it, they'll deal with it, we're mildly interested in all of that. But no, the stuff with Ryan specifically, and also just like, first of all, like Luke, who loves to bandy around the term bitch, like could not have yeah. been more of a could not
oh
I
my
mean,
god
like,
He buckles so, I mean, and I can't complain because I think if someone pulled a gun out on me, I would also
yeah.
buckle pretty fast. But
yeah.
but still, it's like dude, you talk a lot of smack for a water polo player.
Yeah. Which, like, which, what is the hate with water polo? Like, I
they brought it up so much this episode.
They brought it up so much. They brought it up. They bring it up so much, Matt, that when I moved to this, like, when I moved to the mainland and I found out that there were, they, my school had a water polo team, I, like, stayed away from them. Because I didn't know. That's the other thing, too, is that the, I think we mentioned this, we may have not mentioned this in the first episode, but, like, this show coming out and watching some of the series live also kind of coincides with me moving to the mainland, to Southern California in San Diego. And so I'm not saying that, like, it instructed me in culture in any way, because now I'm like, wow, this was very, very much a very specific and curated type of SoCal culture at the time. But it kind of did, because this, yeah, like, yeah, I stayed away from the water polo players. I had friends who played water polo, and then afterwards I'm like, oh my God, they're nice people. They get good grades. They're not calling people bitch.
The way that pop culture will influence how you perceive things, I, to this day, if I have one high school regret, it's that I didn't do track. And I say that all the time, because I actually probably would have been a decent sprinter. I couldn't do long distance runs, but if you needed me to, like, run from point A to point B against somebody, I could usually keep pace or even sometimes outrun them. But I was just so convinced that, like, well, if you're an athlete, like, you're an asshole, and, like, I don't want to hang out with a bunch of assholes. Then it was, like, my senior year when I befriended half the track team, was like, oh, this is, like, the chess club of athletics. Like, it was all the dorkiest, nerdiest kids did track. And I was like, I would have been so at home. Like, I would have been so welcomed and, like, still able to be, like, the dorky film nerd that I was. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you watch a lot of 90s teen flicks right before you go to high school, and it is very clear, like, you are in this bucket, and, like, these people are in these buckets, and you cannot cross the streams. And it does. It affects the way you perceive things.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the what?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
We're making an ad.
Napping ad.
This is where I think if we're doing it right, Alec Baldwin comes in. He says a couple things. Mm. He listens to the podcast every week. Yep. Has he been canceled? Was Alec Baldwin the one who killed somebody? I hear that Gary Sinise is free.
Oh, okay, great.
He hasn't worked since 2020.
So, what would be the script that we would have Gary Sinise say for the Napping Through Happy Hour podcast?
Listen to this damn show. Damn it.
The Napping Through Happy Hour podcast brought to you by Geekscape.
Real life, real drama, real time.
I'm Gary Sinise.
That's the ad. That's the ad. That's the ad.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme. We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, FemmeRegard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
Let's talk music real quick, because this had a lot of songs in it. As I said, a lot of them by Grand Scheme. So the episode kicked off with The Way We Get by Spoon. Grand Scheme had three songs. Sucka MCs played When Ryan's Getting Trained at the Crab Shack. I guess that's how that's pronounced, is when Luke shows up in the Crab Shack to talk to Marissa, and then Rock This Place, or Rock Like This, is playing when they enter Holly's party. We've already talked about the Black Eyed Peas song That Shall Not Be Named, as well as the metal song by Grade 8, Brick by Brick. When everything is going crazy in Holly's party, the Roots' Rollin' with the Heat starts playing. But the song that I picked for the song of the episode comes from a very sweet moment of Marissa and Ryan sitting by the pool talking, which is one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite bands, Fountains of Wayne's All Kinds of Time plays while they're having a nice little moment by the pool. It's a great song, and really it was the only song that stuck out to me besides the one That Shall Not Be Named for very different reasons. Sure. How about you? Did you have a song from this episode?
So I was going to come on here and say the Black Eyed Peas, That Song Is Shut, That Shall Not Be Named, mainly because it is such a moment, right? It's such a, the song itself, it represents a cultural moment in, at the time when we start to have these conversations, right? Because like you, in modern,
I feel like this was like the last big one, honestly.
Well,
like,
so here's the thing.
The fact that they did a radio edit of it at the time is like, okay, we must have already been having that discussion in 2004 of like, could we maybe use a different word?
But the effects of like, that, right? So the effects of that radio edit, right? Like we still feel today, Lizzo, this year, we've seen it a couple times. Lizzo changes a lyric in a song because in the version of her songs because it's the same community is being affected.
Yeah.
The same community is calling for is outraged and calling for some justice. Yeah, Beyonce does it. Taylor Swift is getting hate for the or not hate, but is getting some backlash for some anti-fat representation, right? So like that's happening today. I feel like this should be my cultural pop culture moment. But
go for it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's dive right in. We'll blend.
I want to say that the Fountains of Wayne song, which like I purposely don't look up the music because I don't want to be, unless I already know about it, I don't want to be informed. I just want to let it speak diegetically in the film and in the show. And I think that what you said with the tenderness between them, because there's a lot of those moments that are going to be sprinkled throughout the series, and this is a good, like, it's so pleasant and nice between the two of them in that moment. And how, like, they, you know, he could have just done this all along, right? Like, Ryan doesn't need to have a job to, like, be afford to take Marissa out on all these fancy dates. She just wants him. She wants to spend time with him. And thankfully, they live next door and they live in a fucking mansion. So, you know, they can hang out at the pool and do all these things. So, yeah, the Fountains of Wayne song is the true choice.
All right, so you hinted at it. Let's talk about our pop culture thing real quick. What like moment of pop culture significance do you have that you want to talk about?
Well, I'm just gonna continue my get back up on my soapbox, right? And so like you have these moments this year in music specifically where underrepresented minoritized communities are speaking out against particular things, right? So like there's a word that Lizzo uses, there's in her song Girls that like she erases and is happy to, right? The same thing with Beyonce. She changes the lyric and something a little bit. And then you have Taylor Swift with some fat phobic visuals in her anti-hero video. So like you have these things that are happening. And the interesting thing and where I think the pop culture-ness of it all, right, is the fact that like we meaning like millennials of a certain age, Gen Z already is kind of hip to this. Like we don't have to wait for it. Like the culture can just change like that because digital allows. It's like, okay, we'll do it at midnight when no one's potentially streaming the Lizzo album, or you know, 2 a.m. and we'll just change the lyric and that'll be it. And this is something that you're seeing, and I think you may have posted some, I may have seen this from you or someone else in one of the other many groups that I'm a part of, but just like this is the same thing that you're also seeing with like cuts of different films. So like you're seeing edits happening to certain things. Lilo and Stitch, look it up. Lilo and Stitch on Disney Plus is not the Lilo and Stitch theatrical version that you're getting.
See, and that I don't mind, actually. Something that's more modern, I don't mind. I do think it's an interesting tightrope that we walk, because I am rewatching the Looney Tunes Golden Age collection DVDs that I have. Mm-hmm. And those DVDs all start with a intro from Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh,
where she says, like, hey, we want to give you a heads up that the things that you're watching, there are going to be things in this that are culturally inappropriate. They weren't appropriate then. They're not appropriate now. This isn't, you know, she kind of goes through this whole thing like, it's not an excuse. It's just an explanation here. But the thing that she says that I do agree with is, but we want it to keep these as they were, because to erase it would be to pretend that these types of racist ideas never existed at all. And, like, I do think that that can become a little dangerous. I think that it isn't a bad thing to have a roadmap to show the progress that we've made as people and say, like, we've grown past these types of art in cartoons and have decided that that is wildly inappropriate and have stopped doing it. But, like, I don't know. I think that trying to erase, say, those Looney Tunes cartoons is honestly not that far off from the very Republican bills that we try to fight against. That's like, we just won't talk about racism in class at all. It's like, no, you sometimes you need to see and discuss uncomfortable things.
Yeah.
It's important, because the sooner that you start to pretend it never happened, the easier dumbasses can say, what are you talking about? Racism was never a real thing. Like, it's nice to have that hard evidence of, like, oh, it fucking was, and here's the proof of it. Like, I wish that it didn't. I wish that we could live in a world where that never was the case. But yeah, that is a thing that it is interesting. And Disney is definitely the king of it right now. Disney is combing through that Disney Plus stuff and trying to make sure that whatever is up on that streaming site is as squeaky clean and acceptable as it can be. And I applaud that. I kind of preferred when they did, like, with the Muppet Show, the big controversy of the Muppet Show, that they had the audacity to put a 5-second warning at the front of the episodes just saying, hey, some of this stuff might not have aged well. Like, call it out. I think it's better to call it out than to just erase it from existence.
Yeah, and I think that, like, when you, within the absence of context, right, like, you, in the absence of someone there to have context, and honestly, a lot of those changes, like the changes specifically of the three musical instances, right, that happened in the last year, they rely on the press. Like, they're relying on the media to make those announcements, right? That's the whole reason why you issue press releases and all that stuff, right? So it's there, but the proactive nature of, you know, the proactive nature of Disney, of your what you're like, the document, the Looney Tunes DVDs that you're talking about, like, it's that I was like, yeah, put it in its historical context and let's learn from it. And then, because some people are going to watch it and be like, I don't think that was that bad. And I'm like, yeah, to you. But, like, then you're also unpacking your own privilege.
Exactly.
Matt.
And it's a weird world. And, like, I would say 99% of the time when I'm watching those, I'm like, yeah, this is bad. And then there's always that 1% that I find myself chuckling at. And then I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, and then I do have to unpack a little bit of, like, no, like, that's not right. That shouldn't be funny. I'm going to go on a much more wholesome route for my pop culture promo, which was that the Great British Baking Show season 10 wrapped up. Kind of not my favorite season. It felt like a real... Did you watch?
No, but I heard all about Mexican Day.
Even Mexican Day, I feel like... I watched it after all of the publicity. And I was just kind of like, I don't know about this. Like it was like... How do I word this? I don't even think that it was insensitive as much as it just wasn't funny. Like, because they even called it out in the very beginning where it was like, hey, it's Mexican Day, we have to make sure that we don't offend it. Like, it literally starts with them being like, we have to make sure we don't offend anybody. And it's like, or just don't do it. Just don't do Mexican Day at all would be another option. But even controversies aside, I don't know. A competition show is a lot more exciting when you can't see from a mile away who the final three people are going to be. And then, like, this season had a lot of really great characters and personalities and cooking, but like from the very first episode, you're like, well, these are the four best chefs that they have here. Mm-hmm. And no surprises when it gets to the end of the season. You're like, oh, there they are. The four people from episode one that I was like, these are the ones. I do like twists and I like twists and turns with my reality TV. Mm-hmm. I like to be surprised. My brother also just got me hooked onto Survivor, so I've been following new season of that. But
so what you're saying, Matt, is that you, and when it comes to reality TV, you're just a messy bitch who lives for drama. Like, we can't have
exactly.
We can't have, like, you know, people being nice.
I love Great British Baking Show because of how wholesome and nice it is, but I like to be surprised by a result. I felt like every step of this season, I'm like, that's the person who's going home. That's the person. Like, I could just...
Got it. Okay.
I could have watched episode one. I genuinely think I could have watched episode one and written down in the exact order how every single baker was going to be eliminated and nailed it 95% of it properly. Been like, all right, this person's going to go in episode five. You could just... It was a very unfair advantage on three bakers' parts mm-hmm. compared to the rest. But yes, that is The Outsider, another OC episode that we have knocked out. And stay tuned for one of the most uncomfortable 45 minutes of television I think I've ever watched next week.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
We're making an ad.
Napping ad.
This is where I think if we're doing it right, Alec Baldwin comes in. He says a couple things. Mm. He listens to the podcast every week. Yep. Has he been canceled? Was Alec Baldwin the one who killed somebody? I hear that Gary Sinise is free.
Oh, okay, great.
He hasn't worked since 2020.
So, what would be the script that we would have Gary Sinise say for the Napping Through Happy Hour podcast?
Listen to this damn show. Damn it.
The Napping Through Happy Hour podcast brought to you by Geekscape.
Real life, real drama, real time.
I'm Gary Sinise.
That's the ad. That's the ad. That's the ad.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.